400-verse treatise, chapter 16, indicating the meditations for how to cause teachers and disciples to gain certainty about voidness. All these chapters have been to refute individually any reasons that may be given why, although everything is void of true existence, others grasp at them to be as if not devoid. When you object that it is improper to say that the author, subject matter, and likewise the words of these chapters are void because they exist, well then, since whatever arises from depending on something else is void of true existence, therefore these three as well are not truly existent. If by the faults of everything being void, it were to be established that things are not void, then by these very same faults that would arise from everything not being void, namely that nothing could exist or function, why wouldn't voidness be established? To counter another's position and establish your own position, you need to rely on reasoning. If one faction merely took pleasure in criticizing the other, why wouldn't they be happy to establish their own position based merely on opinion, but not on logic? If a position becomes not reasonable if, upon thorough analysis, what it asserts is found not to be a validly knowable phenomenon, then all three assertions of things being truly existently one or many or beyond speech and so on become untenable positions. If you say that anything seen by bare sensory cognition, such as a vase, has true existence, well, this tradition that asserts the voidness of true existence does not have as part of its tenets such faulty lines of reasoning coming from other Mahayana Buddhist traditions, although in other respects we have assertions in common, such as the bodhicitta aim. As what is not voidness, namely a basis of voidness, does not have true existence, from what could its voidness arise as being truly existent? As one of them does not have true existence, namely the basis of voidness, such as a vase, how could its opponent, namely its lack of true existence, come to arise as truly existent? If the position of voidness were a truly existent position, then what is not that position, namely true existence, would also become truly existent as a position. But since voidness is not truly existent, what is not the position of voidness is not truly existent either. As truly existent phenomena do not exist at all, what could come to constitute the counterset of things that are not void of true existence, which would be necessary for establishing as a truly existent set everything that is void? If functional phenomena in general lack true existence, how could a specific one, such as the heat of a fire, become truly existent? A hot fire as well has no true existence, as was established by previous countering arguments. If it be countered that by merely seeing functional phenomenon you can validly know that functional phenomenon lack true existence, then which of the four positions asserting phenomenon to be truly existently one, many, existent, or non-existent could be seen as having abandoned all faults, because truly existent phenomenon would have to exist in one or another of those ways? You need to refute true existence by relying on valid lines of reasoning. If particles existed as truly existent functional phenomenon, they should be the object of valid cognition. But as they are not the object of any valid cognition, how could they be truly existent? As the Buddhists testified that everything is indeed non-truly existent, for that very reason you should adhere to asserting non-true existence. If the absence of the dual division of some things being truly existent and some being void applies to everything, what else is there that can be truly existent functional phenomenon? If you dispute these lines of reasoning already proven, what can your views, which are different from that of voidness, do for you? They cannot bring you liberation. As there are no truly existent phenomena among all phenomena, it is unreasonable to divide phenomena into truly existent and non-truly existent ones. The voidness that is seen of all things cannot become a division opposed to true existence, because everything is void. If we prasangikas were known as unanswerable to other positions because we asserted the total non-existence of everything, then why is it that your own position can be countered by the logic of voidness and not be established by reason? Even if you say it is well known in the world that lines of reasoning to undermine voidness are easy to find, why is it that you are unable to state any faults in our position of what is other than true existence, namely voidness, which can withstand the test of logic? If by merely your words that everything has true existence, everything were to exist as truly existent phenomena, then why wouldn't everything become non-truly existent merely by our words that they are non-truly existent? And if things do not become totally non-existent because of their being labeled with the names conventionally existing and obtaining, They do not, on the other hand, become truly existent because of their being given the name truly existent, for this latter is a case of applying a misnomer. Suppose you say that everything in the world has true existence, since everything can be spoken of in words by the world, despite these words not having the same truly existent nature as their objects. Well then, how could any functional phenomenon that has ultimate existence become an object of speech of the world, because words and reference truly existently different by nature could not be related? Suppose you claim that all functional phenomena become truly non-existent because of their lack of true existence. Well then, if that were so, then all those who hold the Prasangika position would be asserting that what previously had been truly existent had become totally non-existent phenomena. But this is unreasonable, since throughout beginningless time, everything has been non-truly existent. Because phenomena lack true existence, the non-phenomenon of their voidness cannot come to have true existence. As phenomena have never had true existence, from what basis could the non-phenomenon of the absence or voidness of their true existence be established? Suppose you said that because voidness comes to be established from truly existent lines of reasoning, voidness cannot be void of true existence. Well then, if the asserted thesis and the line of reasoning were truly existently different, they would be unrelated, and the former could not be proven by the latter. And if they were not different, but truly existently one, then it would not be a proper line of reasoning, since being identical with the thesis, the line of reasoning could not prove the thesis, as is in the case of a tautology. And suppose you said that because there are truly existing examples to prove voidness, therefore voidness cannot be void of true existence. Well then, can you say that from the example, just like a crow, you can substantiate that the self is likewise black? A truly existent example and thesis would be likewise irrelevant to each other. If functional phenomena existed with truly established existence, what benefit would there be from seeing voidness, because it would be incorrect? But since you are bound with suffering and samsaric existence from seeing with misconceptions everything as being truly existent, therefore an implied object of this grasping for true existence is to be refuted here. Further, to say like Uchitamatrans that the one, namely consciousness, has true existence, while the other one, namely external objects, does not exist at all, is not so in terms of the facts of reality, since both lack true existence. Moreover, it is not so on the worldly level either, since both are conventionally existent. Therefore, you cannot say that this, namely consciousness, ultimately has true existence, and this, namely external objects, conventionally has no existence at all. In short, any position that asserts either true existence, total non-existence, both true existence and non-existence, or neither, does not exist as a valid one with the support of logic. Even after a very long time, proponents of such positions will never have the ability to expound an answer that could refute voidness, because voidness is irrefutable. This concludes 400-verse treatise on the actions of a bodhisattva's yoga, composed by the learned master Aryadeva, who was miraculously born from a lotus in Sri Lanka. Having crossed the ocean of his own and others' tenets and divided the correct from the incorrect view, he completely clarified the middle path view of Madhyamaka and became the spiritual son of the highly realized Arya Nagarjuna. This was translated from Sanskrit into Tibetan and edited and finalized in the precious hidden pleasure garden in the center of the city of Pema in Kashmir by the Indian master Sushma Jnana and the Tibetan translator Patsap Lotsawa Nyima Chak.